Today I'm welcoming on an expert on post-World War II Germany. Originally from Detroit in the US, she became a journalist at the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Chicago Tribune. Love brought her to Germany, and she came to live in Essen, an industrial city in Germany. Her name is Annika Scott, and we're talking about her first novel, The German Heiress, published by Windmill Books. Hi, Annika. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So how did the book come about?
This book had to be years and years in the making because it was, I think, pretty impossible to write if I didn't speak German, you know, so I had to be in the country for several years, just learning the language and picking it up before I could look at the sources, you know. And the reason is that so many people in Germany didn't really talk about what happened after the war or what life was like after the war. They didn't talk a lot about it because they didn't want to compare their own situation to the crimes that Germany in general had done to other people. And sort of the not only the suffering and the violence across Europe. So Germans were kind of quiet about what happened after the war. And it wasn't really translated. A lot of the interviews, a lot of the oral histories that I, you know, started to dig up were things I could not have found if I didn't know German. So that was kind of big number one thing. The second thing is we moved to Essen because I did come with my husband's job, I should say, here to Essen because, I was a freelance journalist, so I was more flexible. And so once we came here, though, I had a little two-year-old daughter, and we would walk around or I would push her buggy or whatever, looking at where we lived. And the landscape of the city is so sort of post-industrial. And where we live, there's a forest, but within this forest, you see these openings where all of these old coal mines are. And that was the original sort of spark for the story in general is what are these things in this forest, you know, near my house. So once I started looking into that, I uncovered basically what Essen in general was like after World War II. And that was just too fascinating a story not to write down.
Now, the interesting is that it was called the Armory of the Reich, which is a very dramatic name. Can you explain that?
It was a little bit of marketing. The cities around Germany were... not all of the cities were as behind Hitler as others were. There was sort of a difference. And the industrial areas over here, there was a lot of socialism, a lot of leftists and, you know, working parties and things like that. And so the Nazis had to, convince people over here. And there was also a good way to do that was to make sure their jobs were there. And some of the rearmament that Germany did after World War I, Germany was not allowed to build weapons. That's sort of
or have an army. It wasn't allowed an army.
And so once in the 1930s, the Nazis came in and said, "Well, we're going to throw that out the window, the agreements after World War I, and we're going to start building, you know, all the stuff they built." Essen was one of the places where. The Krupp family, as well as other very big industrial families, were like, "Hey, great, you know, we can get back to work." I mean, they literally could then employ all of the people that they wanted to employ again. And so I think it was the cycle of a political, you know, calling the city the armory of the Reich was partly political, but it was also true in the sense that the city was a driving force in producing tanks and, you know, steel and all those things that were needed for the war.
Okay. Tell us about the conditions post-World War II, because I don't think English people know what it was like. Well, no, yeah, as you said, they've kept it quiet.
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me when I talked to my family, my German family. So my husband is German, and it was natural to go to the older generation there first and just say, what was it like? The generation that were adults in the war are not here anymore, but my husband's father was a child. He was maybe 4 or 5 years old. And his parents grew up post-war, so they do remember what it was like then. And, you know, they, one of the things was, they're like, well, there was a famine. And I was like, a famine, you know, because I just never considered that. And there's just not a lot of talk about what was going on in Germany during the occupation in particular. So the time when the Allies directly ran the country. So I started looking into that and talking to people, and absolutely everybody who had been children after World War II in Germany, all they talked about was food, basically. And I think, I don't remember if I had written this down in the author's note of the German heiress, but for instance, one person, a woman I talked to who had been a little girl who had been sent somewhere to get an apple, and she was supposed to bring it home and share it with her sister. But the entire time she carried that apple home, she had to struggle with the fact that she wanted to just eat it and just tell everybody else, I couldn't get it. And she just couldn't do it because everybody was hungry. So she took it home and shared it. And that those sorts of stories were just not the only thing.
Yeah, people would sell anything for food. They'd sell their family nearly, wouldn't they? I mean, people would betray people for food, wouldn't they?
It was
incredibly strange.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scenario. Yeah. So everyone was frightened, hungry, full of shame. I mean, you know, the shame that they must have felt. And they couldn't trust each other, because if you told someone, you could still be reported to the British now that were in command, you know, because they'd lost the SS and the Nazis, but now it was the British, you know. It was like there always someone was sort of there spying on them. Must have been so difficult. So let's talk about the heroine of the novel. She has to change who she is at the beginning of the book, and she's on the run, basically, isn't she? She is a German heiress.
Yeah, she, Clara Falkenberg is the heroine or hero of the story. And at the beginning of the book, she is basically trying to make a new life for herself. I think one of the big things about post-war Germany is this was a chance for people to make themselves new if they could. And that was obviously very hard for many people. If you have, you know, family ties, or if you're tied to a certain place, that's not so easy to reinvent yourself. But she was very motivated to become a new person. That's why she lived under an alias, or one of the reasons. And she is on the cusp of choosing a certain kind of life, you know, where she might, you know, marry someone, settle down in a small town in northern Germany. And that doesn't happen for a reason that was not unusual in Germany after the war. And that's when you find out the truth about people around you.
Yes, but the people, yeah, people had pasts, basically, didn't they? You know, that they didn't want people to know about. As I say, the shame and the untrusting. So people were starving desperate. Essen was bombed harder than many other cities because it was a steel town. Clara is a daddy's girl. He owns Essen, basically. He's Mr. Essen. Can you tell us about her relationship with her dad?
Yeah, I that developed over the course of me writing the book, was just how deeply she was influenced by her father. There are a couple of reasons for that. Clara is not based on any particular person. However, there were many women, or quite a few women, who took over the businesses of their husbands or their fathers or whoever it was during World War II or just after. And sometimes these are quite big name things, or brand names that you might know. So So I had that in the back of my mind, that a woman who had the sort of power that Clara did during World War II, that doesn't come out of nowhere. That's usually had to do with the family ties. So, but Clara is a woman who has a very deep conscience. So you have to sit and think, why would someone with such a conscience condone and do some of the things that she then saw and did during the war? And one of the strongest things I feel, or one of the strongest motivations, is family. You know, if you're so ingrained with certain kind of family value or the importance of certain things in your family, then often we'll choose that over things that we know we aren't right, maybe, but the family matters more. And so once I kind of started thinking about that and developing Clara as a character, then she had to have this relationship with her father that not only gave her the education and the chance to be a woman, like mm-hmm. a modern businesswoman that also doesn't come out of nowhere in the 1930s and 40s. There's, you know, she had to have that chance. And at the same time, though, her father was someone who was supposed to be a sort of an example, a patriarch. So for her, she really has to examine what he meant to her and what he truly was also, because I think the whole book and many people in Germany at the time really needed to look themselves in the face and say, who was I or who am I?
Well, there's one quote that I found really interesting in the book, and you probably picked this up when you know, from living in Germany, because of course we think of Nazis and SS and all these kind of scary things, but a lot of people were just Germans and they didn't really like Nazis at all, but they had to play the game. So there's an expression, hold your nose, open your wallet and shake their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was from Clara's father. So this was a sort of survival technique of, I would say, opportunists in some ways.
Yeah. You had to survive, though, didn't you? He's fighting for Essen. You know, he's fighting for, you know, not just his family. It's his everything, you know.
And her father was certainly someone who thought, you know, Germany was a country that should, you know, should be powerful, right? So there's that generation of people who were humiliated after World War I, right? And so that's where he's coming from. And so for him, even if he doesn't like the Nazis because they're, you know, these brown shirts beat people up in the streets and that's so gauche and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, uncivilized, yeah.
Yeah, but he's still willing to go along with that in order to advance his own.
Well, it's like people that live in communist countries, they have to join the party, you know, just because otherwise you will get imprisoned or something if you have views, you know. I mean, there is pressure on you. I mean, I can understand it. Now, I thought the most interesting character in the book was definitely Clara's mother. I mean, obviously, she's British. She's more right-wing than anybody else in the book, which I love. She loves the Nazis. Don't worry, you don't need to be embarrassed. I know that a lot of upper-class British people, I mean, including Edward VIII, thought the Nazis were great, you know.
Yeah, I had learned a little bit about that over the years, just because I like to read about lots of various things in World War II. And I had known that there was a pretty strong, I don't know if strong's the right word, but there was sort of a prominent level of people in
appeasement. In appeasement.
Yeah.
And also Oswald Mosley was upper class. Right. So, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I had watched some videos on YouTube, you know, just as part of the research into Anne, Clara's mother. I was like, okay, what sort of, I think there was a part where I'm like, oh, Clara was dragged to these rallies, you know, fascist rallies or British Union of Fascist rallies in Britain. So I Googled that, you know, looked up on YouTube, what do those rallies look like? Mm. And you sit there and go, oh my God.
Exactly,
you
know, like Nazi ones, exactly. Yeah. I guess all black instead of brown.
Yeah, and it looked exactly the same as
it was the same thing happened. Yeah, yeah.
No, right, it was just fewer people, but. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't take on as much.
Right. Thank goodness. No.
Thank God. They're the only couple, actually, Moseley and his wife, to have been allowed as a man and a wife to be in prison together. They're the only couple ever in
history. Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And they were given a sweet little house, you know, but it was in the prison. But I love that they loved their own. because they were posh, they were allowed. Terrible.
It was really fun to be able to do that and to write Anne as an English woman.
What gave you the idea?
Yeah, I wanted Clara to have sort of a way out that she didn't take. The decisions in Germany that people could make during the 1930s, and Clara was very young, by the way, through most of that, but the decision she could have made is, I could leave. I'm half British. And you know, part of her thought process later, after the war, why didn't I do certain things? You know, why didn't, I think Fenshaw, the British officer who pursues her, brings this out in her. A lot of Germans obviously left Germany because they could not live here, went into exile, obviously Jewish, others.
A lot of the artists went to America, didn't they?
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
Filmmakers, artists, yeah.
But this was such a hard decision for them, extremely hard. So I even today, if you talk about World War II in Germany, you know, there's a certain group of people who look at that generation of Germans and say, well, why didn't they just leave? If you didn't like it, why didn't you just go? And I'm like, it's so hard to leave your country. I wasn't forced to go, but I didn't leave because I don't like the United States. I love the United States, but you know, it is an extremely hard thing to leave your life, even if you live in a police state.
Everyone always says, why did the Jewish people stay? Because they'd lived there for the last 1,000 years. They thought they were Germans. They fought in First World War, you know. They were accepted members of society, you know. I mean, they were pillars of society.
Yeah.
So it's like, why would these people, you know, you just think, it's the word home is the most important, because home has so many emotional connotations, and it's not leaving a country, it's leaving your home, which is you only do under very, very strong duress, you know. Because, I mean, then you're a refugee, you know, so very, so interesting. I'm very interested to know, what are people still of a new generation of Germans? Have they shame attached to the war? Are they inquisitive? Do they talk openly, or is there still a secretiveness?
It's not secretive anymore. And I don't think it really was inside Germany. It's more like outside, that, you know, the view to outsiders was blocked off a bit more. But within Germany, they always talked about it to each other. And my husband remembers when his grandparents, so now we're on my husband's grandparents, who are sitting there drinking at night and just crying and just devastated decades later, of course, also by what they saw, what they did, what they lived through, people who were gone because of, you know, denazification and various other things. It was very hard for Germans to really mourn their dead, because, you know, the soldiers who fought had fought for the Nazis, basically. So you know, you're ashamed of what they fought for, or if you're ashamed of what they fought for, then it's very hard to mourn the people who are gone. So I think all of that was in my like two generations ago already. You know, my husband was born in 1969, and by the time he was born, there was a lot of stuff where people were really asking the older generation, what did you do? You know, what did you do? That was really in the 60s, when the whole world was asking.
They came out.
And that happened here too. And so that's that was a really a good breaking point. And I would say now, Germans in general, I'm totally generalizing right now. I don't know that shame is really the right word anymore. It's not. I think it's more, there's a responsibility for what happened.
Mm-hmm. That's
as far as the country goes, but also globally, because it's not just a German
it's
issue.
Happening in all countries now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fascism.
So I think it's more about just, you know, if you are German, there's a certain special responsibility to not let something like that happen again, and hopefully nowhere in the world.
Well, they are quite a naturally serious race. So I imagine they would think, and they're very deep thinkers, as you know. They were kind of so much more deeply than anyone else. So I think that they would take it very responsibly, like you say, I can imagine, you know, like they were the first people to be green, you know, they're more conscious, I think, of things than other people, because of what they've been through. You know.
Oh, I think that's absolutely true. I'm not going to get into Brexit because I'm just not.
I prefer not to, thanks.
Let's not. But if
the only good thing we've got out of it is we've got the jabs, okay?
if we look at the European Union, though, you know, so Germany is right in the center, almost in the center of the European Union. It has 9 neighbors, like 9 borders. So you can imagine, if you're a country with that many countries around you, and your country has invaded them at least once, you know, then that still is something people remember. Of course they do. And so the sort of balance of power within the European Union has a lot to do with World War II still. It does. So the fact that Germany really is a champion for the EU and the vast majority of Germans are for the EU, there's no question about that, is because they know how nervous the neighbors get when Germany is too powerful, because it's sort of a natural, it's in the center of Europe, it's got a lot of industry, it's got the most people in Europe as a country.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So the population
They're industrious. I mean, that's what they're famous for, they're industrious. And when they say something, they do it, you know.
Yeah.
They're reliable.
And it's the wealthiest country in Europe. So so all of these things together mean that Germany could be a local power, you know, within Europe, just naturally. But as long as they cooperate with the EU, then that's balanced out a little bit. And that's good. That's good for the continent. It might be slightly less good for the Germans. I don't know. But absolutely everybody here, I will guarantee you, values peace more than they do almost anything else. Like, this is a country that knows what war does.
That's brilliant. Well, that's the goodness, if there's any goodness that can come out of war, to be a pacifist, to hate it, which I certainly do. The characters in your book are fictional, but the hard facts about the war are not. I have asked this before, you have said this, but was there anyone that you, was Clara a person that you could imagine? Was she a person in history that you put onto? Or I know she's composite, but was there anyone you could tell us about that was similar to her?
There was Clara was a composite.
Yeah.
Or I should say Clara's family more is a composite, really.
The Tysons, isn't it? They're very, very famous.
Yeah, the Tysons were there. The Krupps were there. There were a lot of German families that did some questionable things during World War II. Be really nice about it. And I saw a documentary once here in Germany about that in particular. And it was one of the things that made me want to write Clara's story to begin with. And this documentary was about how many of these industrial families sort of made deals with the Allies after the war so that the, you know, evidence against the families would be lost, sort of disappear, you know, things like that. And unfortunately, the British were actually very, very good at this, at making deals with some of these families. And so Very few of them actually really were put to justice for what they did. And the head of the Krupp family at the time did go to prison, or I should say the second son down, went to prison for a while, but you know, they didn't have to pay for any of it. You know, for the longest time, it was not until the 1980s that the various companies and industry in Germany really had to pay for, you know, money, real money for what they did during the war. So Clara really, it's her family that came from real situations and real families in Germany. Clara herself was fictional, and she has something to do with the very first factory that was allowed to open in the British zone after World War II was run by a woman. And that always fascinated me, because this was a different kind of factory. It was a glass works, making glass. They needed window glass. They needed all those things because it was gone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and she had taken it over from her husband, I believe. So I just needed that spark of, all right, there were women doing these things. There were women running factories during the war, and after the war, they picked it right back up and kept going.
It's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous and talking all about the German heiress. I must say, I was gripped. I absolutely adored the book. And The German Heiress by Annika Scott is published by Windmill Books. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, right. Oh.